Thank you. Well, thank you and good morning to all. This is the first time I've ever worn something like this, so if you see me going like this, you know why. Thank you, Pastor Mark, and thank you, First Presbyterian, for inviting me. And it's a great honor and privilege to be here. And it moves me deeply to see so many people here on a Saturday morning. So hopefully all of you are early birds and are just ready to go and lift me up. And for you, those of you that are not early birds, I'm sorry. I didn't book this starting time. I don't know what drew you personally to be here this weekend and to be here with us today, but I'm certain that as Christians, I think all of you are Christians, and that's what brought you here. And if not, thank you for being here, okay? Because we know that you care, and God calls us to care for the least of these. I'm certain that as Christians, we all share two specific desires that brought us here to sit in this church for this weekend. Number one, we seek to emulate the incarnate God, Jesus Christ. Number two, we seek the truth. First, what is truth? We study the Bible because we believe that what it says is true. We believe that it is the Word of God. The Bible tells us the truth about God and the nature of the world, and it tells us about us as blood and flesh human beings. It also tells us what our Father expects of us, His children, and it expects us to be His hands and His feet in the world. And the Bible tells us what we need to be and what we need to do to be like Jesus Christ. The life of Jesus, our Redeemer, who was called in the Bible as a friend of prostitutes, of drunks, and of foreigners, beckons us to pay attention to certain truths in our world that are so often hidden. Truths like massive violence, helplessness, abuse, oppression, rejection, injustice. And He tells us that we need to be intimately involved in combating all these things. In Matthew 25, Jesus told us, "I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." In Luke 10, Jesus tells us that all the commandments are summarized in two things. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind. And second, love your neighbor as yourself. In order to adequately respond to our neighbor and love him or her like ourselves, we must draw near to their reality, to the hidden truths of their helplessness, their abuse, their oppression, their rejection, and their injustice. Once we establish the reality of what is occurring, we will be better equipped to respond like our Redeemer, and therefore be His hands and His feet to preach good news to the poor, proclaim freedom for the prisoners, recovery of sight for the blind, and to release the oppressed. So thank you for the invitation to be here. I consider it an honor to give voice to hundreds of thousands of our Latin American brothers and sisters, whose lives and stories are silenced by a heavy and predominantly hidden oppression called trafficking. Proverbs 14:25 says that a truthful witness saves lives. As we were reviewing this talk with my wife during the last few days, she thought that a good title for this sermon, for this message, would be "A Truthful Witness Saves Lives." I'm not very good with titles, so the title you have in your brochure is what I came up with: "Human Trafficking Across Latin America." So I want you to pay attention to my wife and say "yes, dear," like I did, and change it. So we're going to call it "A Truthful Witness Saves Lives." And that's my desire to be this morning, that by being a truthful witness regarding what I have seen over the last 7.5 years that I have been serving at IJM in the countries of Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Dominican Republic, Nicaragua, Peru, and most recently Bolivia, that you can also become a truthful witness about trafficking and in turn save thousands of lives across Latin America, and that we can do so in Jesus' name. So we will dedicate this time in the morning to study the truth about human trafficking. First, what is trafficking? Second, who are the victims of trafficking? Third, why must we be concerned about trafficking? And fourth, is there hope? So my first point was, what is trafficking and how does this fit with global slavery and global poverty? I will start with an international definition given by the United Nations. And the United Nations has defined trafficking in the following way. And they say, hopefully it's behind me. I'm sort of like Mike yesterday. The UN has defined trafficking as the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, or receipt of persons by means of the threat or use of force or other forms of coercion, of abduction, of fraud, of deception, of the abuse of power, or of a position of vulnerability, or of the giving or receiving of payments or benefits to achieve the consent of a person having control over another person for the purpose of exploitation. Exploitation shall include, at a minimum, number one, the exploitation of the prostitution of others or other forms of sexual exploitation. Number two, forced labor or services. Number three, slavery or practices similar to slavery. Number four, servitude. Or number five, the removal of organs. I'm a lawyer, so I love these types of definitions. I don't know how many of you are attorneys and are excited. Yes, we get a very legal definition here today. But for those of you who are not lawyers, I will sum up this definition in one sentence, much easier than the legalist lawyers can come up with. And so for the layman and the non-attorney, trafficking is simply the preying upon and the exploitation of vulnerable people. That's all it is. The preying upon and the exploitation of vulnerable people. So according to this definition from the UN, what are the key elements of trafficking? Coercion, fraud, deception, and abuse of power. Who are most frequently targeted to be trafficked then? Those who are vulnerable. Who are the vulnerable? The poor, who just like you and me, want to pursue opportunities to better their lives and those of their families and the people they love. But sadly, what is the purpose of trafficking? Exploitation of those fellow human beings. As reflected in Psalm 10, violence against the poor, which in today's world includes trafficking, is not so much driven by the overwhelming power of the perpetrators. It is driven by the vulnerability of victims. Psalm 10 says, "In his arrogance, the wicked man hunts down the weak, who are caught in the schemes he devises. His mouth is full of curses and lies and threats. Trouble and evil are under his tongue. He lies in wait near the villages. From ambush, he murders the innocent, watching in secret for his victims. He lies in wait like a lion in cover. He lies in wait to catch the helpless. He catches the helpless and drags them off in his net. His victims are crushed. They collapse. They fall under his strength." Latin America experiences more income disparity than any other region in the world. USAID, the United States Agency for International Development, which is a government agency, estimates that 35% of the population in Latin America lived in poverty in 2007. They estimate that there are about 569 million people living in Latin America, and so out of that number, 199 million people are living in poverty in 2008. In many aspects, these 199 million are helpless. They are vulnerable. They are weak. With that in mind, it is better to understand then why hundreds of thousands of poor people in Latin America would jump at an offer for a better job promise just across the other side of the border. Imagine you being the eldest daughter in your family in search for an honest way to help your parents provide for your younger siblings. You're offered a waitressing job in a tourist area in a neighboring country. You live with your parents' blessing, accompanied by an acquaintance, but soon find yourself sold into a brothel. You, however, do not get paid anything once you get there. In fact, you are forced to work in the brothel to pay off the debt your trafficker spent to bring you to this place. You are abused into submission, sexually, psychologically, and physically. Plus, you are far from your home. Your passport and your ID has been taken away from you. You do not understand the local language. You are not sure exactly where you are and without any means to return back home. Or imagine yourself being a young boy on his way to or from school when a family friend offers you a ride home. Instead of giving you a ride home, this man will then hand you off to another man and another until you find yourself halfway across the continent. Or imagine yourself as a father. Maybe you are a father. You are a skilled laborer who dreams of better opportunities for your children. An agency with TV and newspaper ads offers work in a faraway country that will pay 10 times the amount you make every month. And all that is required of you is to pay for the plane ticket and the visa paperwork up front. The promise of recouping your costs and caring for your family soon fades away when you find yourself cooking, eating, and sleeping in the same small space where you share one bed, one restroom with 200 other compatriots of yours that are working essentially as slaves every day. Imagine you have a boyfriend who offers to take you to his home country to be with him. With your parents' blessing, you go with him. But when you arrive there, he sells you to a brothel. This is the human side of trafficking. It is the preying upon and the exploitation of the most vulnerable. Second, who are the victims of trafficking? Hundreds of thousands of mothers, daughters, and sisters are trafficked every year in Latin America, all vulnerable, all exploited, all awaiting a voice of truth to speak, to defend, and to rescue. Human trafficking in Latin America was first documented at the brink of World War I by the League of Nations, which was the predecessor to the United Nations, which conducted a three-year investigation on the issue. The investigation concluded that Latin America is the trafficked market of the world. This was in World War I. Today, Latin America is second to Asia as the second largest global source of enslaved women. Every year, sources estimate that there are 100,000 women and children trafficked across Latin America. Every year, 500,000 girls under the age of 16 are prostituted in northeast Argentina. Every year, 35,000 Colombian women are sold into the international sex industry for annual profits estimated at $500,000. Among the 50,000 persons that are trafficked into slavery in the United States every year, 15,000 of them are Latin Americans, according to the CIA. And according to various studies, most of the female sex slaves in the United States are from Mexico, our neighbor to the south. Numbers seem to be overwhelming, especially when then these numbers are the equivalent of university campuses, football stadiums, and entire communities and neighborhoods. Yet we must remember that each number is made up of individuals, men, women, and children, who have their own story of deception, abuse, and devastation. If we are Christians, we believe that we are fearfully and wonderfully made in God's image, as it says in Genesis chapter 1. Thus, all these numbers represent real people, all made like you and me, in God's image, who are awaiting a voice of truth, defense, and rescue. For the last 2 years, I've been serving with IJM in the nation of Bolivia. Bolivia is in the heart of South America. And it's a landlocked country surrounded by five other nations. Bolivia has a population of about 10 million people, just so you have a sense, and it is about the size of Texas and California together. It's a pretty large nation. Yesterday, I was reading the Bolivian newspaper, and a study published by the Jubilee Foundation stated that out of the 10 million people that live in Bolivia, 3.7 million of them earn less than $1 a day. So 37% of the population lives in extreme poverty. According to this same foundation, since the year 2000, when the world got together at the United Nations and signed the Millennium Development Goals, the number of poor in people living in extreme poverty in Bolivia in the last 7 years, to be exact, 300,000 new people entered into extreme poverty in Bolivia. So 37.7% of the country earns less of a dollar to spend every day. Bolivian newspapers reported last September, so last month, that three Bolivian women between the ages of 15 to 17 traveled to Tierra del Fuego, Argentina, with their boyfriends, men who were over the age of 30, who promised them jobs in Argentina. They left from the city of Cochabamba, which is the first dot there, and traveled down to Tierra del Fuego in southern Argentina. The girls left with their parents' consent and soon found themselves forced into sexual labor. In a similar manner, hundreds of Bolivian women are taken from the cities of La Paz and El Alto, mostly, to La Rinconada in Puno, Peru, a Peruvian mining town with similar promises and outcomes. In 2006, only 2 out of over 200 young women were rescued from one of the approximately 180 brothels in the town of Puno. Bolivians, one of the not very well known facts about Bolivia that I want to share with you today is that Bolivians are good tailors. They have a reputation, at least there, for being good tailors. My suit that I'm wearing this morning was made by a Bolivian tailor, hand sewn. The only place I could afford it is in Bolivia. And he has his office about 8 blocks from where our IJM office is located. Like him, his name is Lorenzo. Like Lorenzo, there are hundreds or thousands of people who have good sewing skills in Bolivia. Jocelyn was one of these people with good sewing skills. When Jocelyn was 17, she and her boyfriend were offered jobs in a clothing factory in Buenos Aires, Argentina. She and her boyfriend left the Bolivian countryside with the hope of a better life. At the Bolivia-Argentina border, a man named Gonzalo separated Jocelyn and her boyfriend and the other people that came with her into two groups, male and female, so that they could cross the border. Jocelyn's group made it through the border. Her boyfriend's group did not. 2 days later, in Buenos Aires, Gonzalo informed her that if she did not have sex with him, she would never see her boyfriend again. And so she loved her boyfriend, she wanted to see him, so she agreed to be raped. And so began 7 years of rape and abuse, and the birth of 2 children from this abuser. Jocelyn had very little hope. She was isolated, abused, and Gonzalo had plenty of connections. He owned at least 3 sweatshops in Buenos Aires, and he was an expert at recruiting Bolivians to come work in Argentina. He was also an expert at running his business as a slave operation. The Bolivians he recruits expect to have paying jobs as tailors upon arrival in Argentina. Once they arrive there, Gonzalo informs them that so that they can save money, they will be paid in a lump sum once a year. They live in their factory, and that's where they sleep, and that's where they work. However, Gonzalo always invents an excuse to fire the workers before the year ends. And so these people are fired and never paid. Since they came to Bolivia to Argentina illegally, they are afraid that they will get arrested if they ever denounce their non-payment. So they never denounce the abuse, and Gonzalo comes to Bolivia at least once or twice a year to recruit more people for his operation. IJM of Bolivia opened its doors about 2 years ago, in part to help respond to thousands of Bolivians like Jocelyn. She is just one of the thousands of Bolivians who cross borders every year in hopes of a better life, but instead fall into a road fraught with danger and exploitation. Needless to say, trafficking is a serious problem, which leads us to our third point in our quest for truth this morning. Why must we be concerned about trafficking? There are several reasons. The first one is that we must worry about trafficking in the context of weak local law enforcement. Often their presence is a source of insecurity for the poor by either protecting the trafficking business or not knowing how to stop it. Human trafficking thrives only when the local enforcement authorities decide that they will not intervene to stop it. It's as simple as that. Yesterday we heard that trafficking has to function as an open market, and for you For those of you who were there at the call and response movie, they said the same thing. Trafficking has to be out in the open. If not, it's not profitable. And in many cases, law enforcement authorities don't stop it because, depending on the country, people will be overworked, understaffed, poorly trained, or flat out bribed. Bolivia, for example, passed its first anti-trafficking law in the year 2006. The law provides for sentences for up to 16 years imprisonment for people who traffic other human beings. However, enforcement still leaves much to be desired, as the police have lacked both the training and the resources. According to the 2008 U.S. State Department's Trafficking in Persons report, it says that Bolivia is principally a source country. It's principally a source country for men, women, and children trafficked for the purposes of sexual and labor exploitation. Bolivians are trafficked mainly to Argentina, Brazil, Peru, Chile, Spain, and the United States for forced labor in sweatshops, factories, and agriculture. Young Bolivian women and girls are trafficked within the country from rural to urban areas for commercial sexual exploitation. After passing the new trafficking law in 2006, the Bolivian National Police opened its first anti-trafficking unit in the city of La Paz in the year 2007. So we passed the law, but it took them about 1 year to actually open a unit in the police to enforce the law. That unit has 7 officers right now for a city of 1 million people. IJM also works in the city of El Alto, which is right next to La Paz. The anti-trafficking unit in the city of El Alto opened in May 2008. So 2 years after the law was passed. There's currently, as far as I know, only 2 other cities in Bolivia that have an anti-trafficking police unit. There are 2 small offices. The one in La Paz having 7 officers right now. The one in El Alto, 3 officers. And they do not know how to address the problem of brothels that traffic girls from Brazil and Argentina, with plenty of connections along the way. These police officers do not know how to stop the fact that many of the girls working in the brothels of La Paz are recruited from rural towns of eastern Bolivia, specifically from the departments of Santa Cruz and Beni, who draw in good business due to their light complexions and quicker developing bodies. For Camila and Yareli, it is the lack of resources and training for police that increased their insecurity. About 8 months ago, Camila responded to an ad in the newspaper in Santa Cruz offering 1,500 bolivianos a week, roughly about $210, which asked for work as damas de compañía, or companion girls, which sort of could be translated into escort girls. Camila did not know what that meant. So when she called the phone number in the ad and asked to be explained what does dama de compañía mean, they told her, don't worry about it. When you come to La Paz, we'll tell you what that means. And if you want to come, you don't have to worry. I will pay for your bus ticket so that you can come. It's about a 15-hour bus ride from Santa Cruz to La Paz. And so Camila, the sound of hearing $210 a week in a country where the official minimum wage is $75 a month, and for half of our clients do not make that amount, she thought it was a good idea. And so she got on a bus and set for La Paz. Once arriving there, she was picked up at the bus station and taken to a house where she was going to live and work because she was going to live in the brothel. In La Paz, her ID, which revealed that she was 16, was taken away from her because she shouldn't, if she kept it, she might lose it. So to help her, they would take it away from her. And she was told that she had to prostitute herself. Camila was scared but embarrassed to call home and did not know how to get home without her ID. She worked in this brothel for 7 months, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Several months later, Camila's childhood friend named Yareli arrived to the brothel, lured from Santa Cruz by the same promise in the newspaper of a high-paying job. Like her, like Camila, the owner told her, once you get to La Paz, I will tell you what the job means. And so The owner then picked her up at the bus station, dropped her off at the brothel, where the other girls were ordered to give Jareli a miniskirt and a short blouse. In the brothel, Jareli saw Camila for the first time in years, who helped her get settled there. Given that Bolivia is the second poorest country in the hemisphere, traffickers have a ready supply of young girls like Camila and Jareli, looking for better opportunities to support themselves and their families. The business is even easier because the new police trafficking units are still learning that there is a crime that they can combat, and they are still learning how they can stop it. The only way for local law enforcement to know about Camila and Jareli's situation is to visit the brothel and do an investigation. However, the trafficking unit has a very small number of human resources and an even smaller budget to do its work. The chances of them visiting this brothel and doing an effective investigation is practically zero. Second, we should also be concerned about trafficking because it is a lucrative criminal enterprise. Trafficking is so lucrative that it even draws the very authorities that are supposed to protect the most vulnerable. The power of law enforcement is intended to protect the vulnerable instead starts preying upon them, recruiting them for labor or sex exploitation, facilitating illegal border crossings, collecting bribes in red light districts, and producing illegal documentation when necessary. The draw of an extra income is tempting for police officers who earn miserable wages. A middle management police officer in Bolivia, for example, will make less than $220 a month, hardly enough to support his family. Low wages are a reality, even for those in high-level positions in many police establishments, and the traffickers take advantage of those financial needs of the police so that they can continue on with their business. Trafficking in persons is estimated to generate profits of in excess of $12 billion a year. According to the U.S. Department of State, it's the third largest criminal enterprise. And like Mike, I won't get into small details, but this week I was reading an interview, and they estimated the market value of around $32 billion a year. And such a lucrative career in Latin America, where the majority of the population struggles for economic survival, is a perfect recipe for a man-made disaster, because there's an infinite number of potential victims. It's the ease with the way that traffickers operates in Latin America that creates a financial incentive for traffickers. But in the end, trafficking is not driven so much by the perpetrators, but rather by the vulnerability of the victims. Vulnerable poor in Latin America are easily lured into the promise of a better life. This is what happened to approximately 300 poor men from the city of Cochabamba, Bolivia, in the last several months. A local company used TV ads, newspapers, street flyers, and brochures to advertise the opportunity of a lifetime. Construction work in Russia for $2,500 a month. For poor construction workers, this just sounded too good to be true. The company informed those interested that for $7,000, they could travel to Russia and get the payment of their dreams. Bolivians took out loans, sold properties and possessions, and did all they could in hopes for a better future and provide better for their children. The age limit for travel was 50 years. But if you were over 50, the company would take you to immigration and give you an altered passport so that you could be under 50. Representatives from the company, in violation of both Russian and Bolivian immigration laws, did all the paperwork for passports and visas, and around 300 Bolivians left in at least five occasions to travel to Russia. The promised salary of $2,500 a month in Russia turned out to be conditional. In order to earn that salary, each Bolivian was told that he had to lay 1,800 bricks every day. When Bolivians told their bosses in Russia, who speak Russian, that it's humanly impossible to lay 800 bricks a day, they told them, oh, you're just like Russian bricklayers. So if you're just like a Russian bricklayer, we will pay you $380 a month. However, Out of those $380 a month, there had to be several deductions from their paycheck. The first one was for $180 a month for housing. The second was $150 a month for food. The third one was $60 for transportation. The Bolivians were also deducted $416.67 a month in order to repay a $2,500 loan that they had obtained from the company in Bolivia so that they could arrange for their transnational trip. In the end, the Bolivian workers in Russia owe their employers $426.67 every month for their work as bricklayers. Working as slaves, not able to return home, and every month more and more in debt. They live in poverty in a foreign country. The Bolivian ambassador to Russia verified in a report that these Bolivians were living in an old rundown building with up to 10 workers per room. All of them shared one bathroom, and their $150 a month deduction bought them a diet of rotten chicken and ramen noodles. So in the end, the company gets free manual labor with $426 of interest per month per employee, which, estimating that there are at least 300 employees, leaves the Russian company and the Bolivians that brought them there a profit of $127,800 a month. Greater vulnerability means greater profits for the oppressors. Money drives trafficking at the heavy cost of corrupting the justice system and demanding vulnerable human lives. Two things directly in contrast to the heart of God: justice and mercy. We should be concerned about human trafficking because it's an effective way to deceive and coerce the victim for exploitation. Transporting an individual to a new place, often another country, disorients an individual. How many of you have traveled to a foreign country and have felt, where am I? If you don't speak the local language, how are you going to ask for help? If you've been moved across the border, you will probably not have documentation and therefore be afraid of local authorities. Or maybe you will be beaten into submission behind closed doors, or simply embarrassed to return home, where your virginity is highly revered, for women especially. How are you going to explain where you have been, and how can that impact my future? Every year, countless numbers of men, women, and children in Central America attempt to flee poverty by traveling north into Mexico, and then with the goal of reaching the U.S., and in some cases, keep going up north to Canada. Many of these people hire smugglers or traffickers who advertise their services for safe passing of each border all the way to the United States. The Mexico-Guatemala border is a critical crossroad for hopeful travelers. The city of Tecunumán in Guatemala faces the Mexican border town of Tapachula. If you are detained at this border, you are most likely to be deported to the Guatemalan side of the border and not back to your home country. In order to cross again, you will need more money to pay for documentation, for a bribe, or to just help hire someone to help you cross to the other side. At Tecunumán, women and children become most vulnerable. Many are forced into prostitution in order to pay their smuggler or trafficker for the debt they have incurred on their trips so far north into the United States. In this region, there is a high demand for prostitution due to the amount of male immigrants and truck drivers that drive around the region carrying goods. Many women who dream of arriving to the United States in search of the American dream will never pass this Mexican border town. Instead, they are obligated to spend their days and nights in the brothel trying to pay off a debt owed to a trafficker or a smuggler. In the year 2003, I traveled with an IJM investigator to Tapachula in Mexico to visit this border. Once there, I met Alejandra, a 17-year-old Honduran, approximately 5 feet 6 inches tall, with brown hair, brown eyes, and a slight build. In La Cascada Bar, Alejandra told me that she had arrived in Mexico approximately 3 months before with a falsified birth certificate. provided by two Mexican traffickers. She had paid 500 Mexican pesos, or about $50 at the time, for a ride from Tecunumán to Tapachula because she wanted to come to the United States. The immigration police in Mexico detained the vehicle driven by one of the traffickers. Alejandra was inside with three other minors who were being trafficked. The traffickers paid the authorities a bribe of 30,000 Mexican pesos, so about $3,000, right on the spot, in order to be set free and keep his vehicle, which the police were threatening to confiscate. Angie's traffickers took her across the border and then sold her into a brothel. In Tapachula, we also met another Honduran named Doris. Back in Honduras, a woman named Crystal had taken Diana's sister to Mexico to supposedly work as a waitress. Crystal later returned to Honduras and offered to take Doris to work as a waitress in Mexico where she could earn more money. Hopeful to see her sister and to encounter greater economic opportunities, Doris accepted the offer. She had no trouble crossing the border because, according to her, Crystal seemed to be good friends with the police. Once in Tapachula, Doris was forced to work as a prostitute in a local bar. Doris and Alejandra were effectively deceived and coerced for prostitution. Fourth, trafficking should concern us because it thrives on sex tourism. The February 2003 Trafficking in Persons National Security Presidential Directive stated that sex tourism is an estimated $1 billion a year business worldwide. If you go to Google and type the words sex tourism, you will find at least 1.8 million results. Western sex tourists bring large amounts of money into the developing world, including Latin America, and too many of them are searching for minors with whom to have sex with, knowing they can easily rape children with impunity. Take, for example, the Dominican Republic. In the Caribbean. In 2004, I went with a team of IJM investigators where we were offered various children between the ages of 10 and 18 in the tourist town of Boca Chica. Upon arriving in Boca Chica, I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to go there, the beautiful small town with a very nice beach. But once you go there and you enter the beach, if you're a single man, you will be approached by at least a dozen men, coming each one of them at a time to you. And they will offer you drugs, cigars, or girls for sex. One of the three. Our investigators rejected offers by people offering girls for sex, and only upon repeated requests, in order to avoid accusations of entrapment, we accepted their offers. Four men in particular came regularly to offer us minors for sex. The first one was Alfredo. Alfredo offered us to take us to a massage parlor where we could have sex with young girls. He provided a business card which included his name to ensure that he received a percentage of the profits from whatever referrals he provided. Alfredo offered both boys and girls for sex and presented a 14-year-old girl to our investigator named Jasmine. Two other men were Raymond and Jesus, who introduced us to Lorena and Jacobo, who were both 13 years old, and Eloisa and Kira, who were 14 years old. A fourth man was Leo, who actually took us to his mother's house, where he offered several children to us for sex. For several days, this man continued offering minors for sex to IJM investigators. Fifth, trafficking should concern us because the AIDS pandemic continues to rage, and the oppression of trafficking victims in the global sex trade contributes to the disease's spread. Victims of rape, particularly in the context of human trafficking, are at high risk of contracting HIV/AIDS. In fact, sexual violence has been identified as one of the main engines of the AIDS pandemic. UNICEF estimates that 1 million women and children are forced into the sex trade every year. According to Stephen Lewis, UN Special Envoy for HIV/AIDS, you simply cannot have millions of women effectively sexually subjugated, forced into sex which is risky without condoms, without the capacity to say no, without the right to negotiate sexual relationships. It's just an impossible situation for women, and there has rarely been a disease which is so rooted in the inequality between the sexes. Sixth, and perhaps most important, trafficking should concern us because it is a direct assault on a beloved human being that is fearfully and wonderfully made, and an assault on the Creator Himself. At IJM, we believe the Bible gives us a clear understanding of what constitutes injustice: the misuse of power to take from others the things God has given them, mainly their life, their dignity, their liberty, and the fruits of their love and labor. We care about victims of trafficking because it strips a person of all these things. It strips them of their life, their dignity, their liberty, and their fruits of their love and labor. Injustice, which includes trafficking, is when the powerful use force and deceit to take from the weak. The Bible says in Proverbs 14:31 that to oppress the vulnerable is an assault on God Himself. To exploit the vulnerable, it's to insult the very Creator of the universe, who made Alejandra, made Doris, Jasmine, Lorena, Jacobo, Eloisa, Kira, Camila, Jareli, Jocelyn, and the 300 Bolivians in Russia. As Psalm 10 expresses, it appears that this world has spun off course. Power is on the side of the oppressor. The oppressor does not fear God. And we might actually ask ourselves, does God even notice? And the psalmist says it best when he says, "Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? The wicked man boasts of the cravings of his heart. He blesses the greedy and reviles the Lord. In his pride, the wicked does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. His ways are always prosperous. He is haughty, and your laws are far from him. He sneers at his enemies. He says to himself, 'Nothing will shake me. I will always be happy and never have trouble.' He says to himself, 'God has forgotten.' He covers his face and never sees." This leads us to our last point. The good news today about trafficking in Latin America is that there is hope. Psalm 10 that I just read ends like this: "Arise, Lord, lift up your hand, O God. Do not forget the helpless. You, O God, do see trouble and grief. You consider it to take it in hand. The victim commits himself to you. You are the helper of the fatherless. Break the arm of the wicked and evil man. Call him to account for his wickedness that would not be found out. The Lord is king forever and ever. The nations will perish from his land. You hear, O Lord, the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them, and you listen to their cry, defending the fatherless and the oppressed, in order that man, who is of the earth, may terrify no more." Over the last 7.5 years, I have seen the evidence of the Lord's reply to the oppressed. I have seen him encourage, defend, and rescue. And as a result, human terror dissipates. In June 2004, IJM investigators worked with Dominican prosecutors and police officers and arrested the 4 men who profited from the sexual exploitation of minors. 1 year later, they were the first people in the Dominican Republic's legal history to be convicted of trafficking and sentenced each to 15 years imprisonment. Several organizations have helped return the construction workers back home from Russia. However, it is estimated that at least 60 people remain in Russia. Several cases have been filed against representatives from the recruiting company, and IJM is providing technical assistance and legal advice to the lawyer handling the cases. In fact, as a result, I have been invited to go train all criminal judges of the cities of Santa Cruz, Cochabamba, and La Paz in the month of November with regards to trafficking and sexual exploitation. We can only pray and hope that this will be a help in improving protection and rescue for trafficking victims. A few months ago, an IJM investigator working undercover in a La Paz brothel encountered Jareli. It was her second day in the job. When he told her that he just did not want to have sex with her and just wanted to talk to her, She hugged him and began crying, telling him, "I don't want to be here. Please get me out." 3 days later, working with local police, IJM conducted an operative in which Camila Giarelli and several other minors and majors tricked into prostitution were rescued. Thankfully, Giarelli was never abused sexually in the brothel. The two girls are back with their families, and the criminal case is ongoing. In fact, I was one of the people that took Giarelli back to her hometown. And when we were on the way there talking, she told me that she was a Christian since the age of 12, and that she had begun attending church since the age of 12. And that during her 5 days in the brothel, she spent every day just praying to God for someone to take her out. And she also told me that she spent her days evangelizing to the other girls that worked in the brothel, telling them that if they got out, there was hope for them. So please continue to lift up these two girls in your prayers, as well as the case. Jocelyn eventually ran away from Argentina to escape from Gonzalo, until he found her in April 2007. He attempted to kill her, but she miraculously survived and was referred to IJM for help. To this day, we are helping her legally, and we're helping the investigation because Gonzalo is currently a fugitive. So please pray that we can find him and bring him to justice. These dark realities are terrifying, but I rest in the hope that God intends that men will terrify no more. May we draw near to the truth of His love and the suffering of His children. To conclude, Proverbs 14:25 tells us, "A truthful witness saves lives." May we count it as a privilege to be witnesses to the truth. May we save lives. Thank you.